Bhagavad Gita as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, Chapter 4, Text 2. Evam parampara praptam. Imam Rajarshayo Viduhu Sakaleneha Mahata Yoga Nashtaf Parantapa. Anyone else?
Evam parampara praptam.
Evam parampara praptam.
Imam rajarshayo vidu.
Imam rajarshayo vidu.
Sakaleneha mahata.
Sakaleneha mahata.
Yogo nashta parantapa.
Yogo nashta parantapa.
Okay. Ladies, please. Anyone else?
Evam parampara praptam.
Evam parampara praptam.
Imam
rajarshayo viduh.
Sakaleneha mahata.
Yogo nashta parantapa.
So please read.
This science was thus received through the chain of disciplic success. You want to read that word by word? This supreme science was thus received through the science of disciplic succession, and the saintly kings understood in that way. But in the course of time, the succession was broken, and therefore the science as it is appears to be lost. Purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. It is clearly stated that the Gita was especially meant for the saintly kings because they were to execute its purpose in ruling over the citizens. Certainly, Bhagavad Gita was never meant for the demonic persons who would dissipate its value for no one's benefit and would devise all types of interpretations according to personal whims. As soon as the original purpose was scattered by the motives of the unscrupulous commentators, there arose the need to re-establish the disciplic succession. 5,000 years ago, it was detected by the Lord Himself that the disciplic succession was broken, and therefore He declared that the purpose of the Bhagavad Gita appeared to be lost. In the same way, at the present moment also, there are so many editions of the Gita, especially in English, but almost all of them are not according to the authorized disciplic succession. There are innumerable interpretations rendered by different mundane scholars, but almost all of them do not accept the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, although they make a good business on the words of Sri Krishna. This spirit is demonic because demons do not believe in God, but simply enjoy the property of the Supreme. Since there is a great need of an edition of Gita, of the Gita in English, as it is received by the parampara disciplic succession system, an attempt is made herewith to fulfill this great want. Bhagavad Gita accepted as it is a great boon to humanity, but if it is accepted as a treatise of philosophical speculations, it is simply a waste of time.
Om agyanati mirandhasya gyananjana shalakaya chakshurin militam yena tasmai shri guruve namaha. Nama Shrishtam Manum Api Shachiputram Atra Swarupam Rupam Tas Yagrajam Urupurim Maturim Goshtavartim Radha Kundam Girivaramaho Radhika Madhavasham Prapto Yasya Pratita Kripaya Shri Gurum Tam Natosmi. Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Atah Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavangscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagarna Raghunatan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagarna Lalita Shri Vishaka Guru Vaishnav Bhagavan Tine Smarane Hoy Vigna Vinashan Anaya Ashay Hoy Nijavan Chita Puran Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. The title of this talk is given as Bhagavad Gita should be accepted. What is it exactly? Bhagavad Gita should be accepted as it is, not kept as it is. It's a play on the meaning of the word. Kept as it is means you just keep it on yourself. I guess that's the idea. But it should be accepted philosophically as it is. So this purport, the last sentence, Bhagavad Gita, give it to me, I'll read it out, because Srila Prabhupada specifically talks about this point of well, prior to that in the purport also, but he sums it up by saying, Bhagavad Gita accepted as it is a great boon to humanity, but if it is accepted as a treatise of philosophical speculations, it is simply a waste of time. And prior to this in the purport, he makes a more strong point than a waste of time. He says that people who take the Gita and give their own interpretations, they said their spirit is demonic, so it's worse than a waste of time. It's wrong, it's bad. Srila Prabhupada begins the translation by saying this supreme science. Where do you find in the translation the word science in the Sanskrit? Of course, it's, the first word is Avam, thus, so it refers to the previous verse, which is Sri Bhagavan Uvacha Imang Vivasvate Yogam Proktavan. Yeah, you should know it also. Proktavan Ahamavayam Vivasvan Manave Prahur Manur Ikshvakave Bravit. Krishna says, I spoke this, imang vivasve proktavan aham avyayam. I spoke this timeless unchanging knowledge long ago to Vivasvan, the sun god, who spoke it to Manu, who spoke it to Ikshvaku, and evam, in this way it comes in a line of disciplic succession. The word science we won't exactly find there. Of course, science is an English word. And the whole concept of science, we don't have that exactly in the Vedic culture. Especially the atheistic idea of science, that science is something which is definite and fixed, and Bhagavad Gita and such is just religion, it's just some idea. That's all. So that idea isn't there. Of course, we have the word vijnana, which is often used in Indian languages for science. And that word comes again and again in Gita, Jnana Vijnana Triptatma, for instance. Vijnana meaning specialized knowledge or realized knowledge. But Srila Prabhupada always stressed that what he is giving, Krishna consciousness, is a science. Why did he say it's a science? Any idea? Any thoughts about it? Do you ever think about that? Why did he say it's a science? Yeah, what would you like to say? Yeah, that's one of the, that's what's supposed to be science, right? It should be reproducible. For instance, if someone presents a scientific paper that they made this research, and he did this, and we got this, and this result, then it should be replicable. There's a major problem in science at the present time, maybe you know, of people writing papers and no one can reproduce the results because they're fudging it. They're just making it up as they go along. But the idea is that science is something that can be definitely ascertained, and that's one of the great arguments of atheists against religionists, that religion is just a belief and we have science, we can show it. Of course, you can't show Big Bang Theory. Can anyone think of an experiment to replicate the Big Bang? What about biological evolution? Well, they say that if you, just like they show some flies, if they're in an atmosphere, we've seen an atmosphere where suddenly there was so much pollution and everything became black, and then their bodies started becoming black. But then you take them out of that atmosphere, and then again they don't become black, they're non-black. Oh, there are many questions about biological evolution. As Charles Darwin said, when I think of the eye, it drives me nuts. I'm the human eye, because there's supposed to be steps in between, right? Anyway, there are big problems with biological evolutionary theory, but the idea is that you should be if you want to make a statement in science, you should be able to demonstrate it, right? And it's clear, it's fixed, it's accepted. It's beyond doubt. That's the idea that science conveys. And I'm just giving some examples to show that, well, maybe it's not so clear after all in many of the things they say. But in school, I don't know, but when I was in school, they do things like burning hydrogen in an atmosphere of oxygen, and then you condense the gas and you have water. Of course, you're told it's hydrogen. You don't really know it's hydrogen. And they tell you that we have an atmosphere with oxygen in it, but you don't really know that. And then you condense and it looks like water, but you don't really know what it is. But anyway, it's supposed to show. And you burn magnesium and you get magnesium oxide. Okay, so it's science. All right. It's predictable, it's reproducible. And no doubt if you were to analyze the gas which is in the container, it is hydrogen. And if you were to analyze, there is some oxygen in the atmosphere enough to burn the hydrogen. And so you get, what is it? What is it? 2H2 plus 2O equals 2H2O. Is that right? See, I remembered. Over 50 years. I learned something at school. I did pass in chemistry. So that's science. So the idea is that Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is speaking a certain message. He wants to communicate something to Arjuna. Arjuna is bewildered. He doesn't know what's going on with his life or with the world. Why should the world be so bad that I'm in such a situation? Why is this situation arisen? It shouldn't be. In one sense, Arjuna, he was very experienced. He'd seen so many things, not only on earth, but even in the heavenly worlds and in the lower worlds. He'd had his easy journey to other planets. He'd been to all over different parts of the universe. So he's very experienced, and he had a lot of experience from his childhood of the awful behavior of Duryodhana and company toward him and his brothers. But still, he was in one sense very innocent, because he thought, why are they doing this? Why should we get involved in a fight with them? Why should this situation come up? So Krishna told him that there are certain things to be understood, that if it's understood properly, then you understand clearly. That we find at the end of Gita, Krishna asks Arjuna, well, did you understand it? Arjuna said, yes. And then the implication of Arjuna understanding it is that he's ready to follow Krishna's order. So it's philosophical, but it's not philosophical speculation. Generally people think philosophy is just some speculation. But the Greek philosophia, that from the Greek comes the English word, which means love of truth. In Sanskrit, we also have terms darshan, means seeing, in a special sense. Darshan is a word used for philosophy. It's a special sense of the word seeing. Just like in English, if you say, actually it's like, oh, I see. Seeing means not just seeing, but understanding. Real seeing is understanding. You may see something, but you don't understand what is its usage. If someone was to bring a microphone, a traditional microphone, like this. Okay. You bring it into something like this. And you bring it into, say, a jungle area, maybe 50 years ago. Less than 50 years ago, I still saw in some part of India, in the forest, people going around, tribal people, they're going hunting with bows and arrows, and just wearing a kopin, that's all. So if you give this to them, they can see it. But what is it for? Maybe they use it for breaking nuts or hitting people on the head. But they can see it, but they have no idea what the usage of it. Sometimes when I'm giving initiation also, we give a microphone to someone, and clearly it's the first time they ever held a microphone in their life. They don't know what they're doing with it. So you can simply to see something doesn't really mean to see. Real seeing is seeing with knowledge. So another word which, if we want to translate philosophy back into Sanskrit, another term we can use is tattva jnana. Tattva, you can't really translate that properly, but it means the nature of any particular subject. So we have Vishnu tattva, Rasa tattva, and tattva as a general term means understanding the nature of something, or what is the nature of something, and then jnana, knowledge. So Krishna wanted to give Arjuna knowledge. Why did he do? Arjuna just wanted to know, should I fight or not? What is the point? Arjuna wanted to know from the point of view of dharma. He was thinking of dharma. He was in a quandary. Dharma sankat. That happens in this world. Again and again and again. The whole Mahabharata is one dharma sankat after another. Because what you should do in any given situation, it can be very difficult to say because one duty clashes with another. Just like Krishna gives an example in the, it's there in Mahabharata, that one man, he had made a vow never to tell a lie in his life. Then one day came running past his house a man saying, I'm a merchant, I'm carrying gold and there are thieves running behind me. Where can I go? Where can I hide? He said, you go in the wood just here. A few minutes later, the thieves came and said, we're chasing a man with a bag of gold. Where did he go? He said, they went in the wood just there. So they went there, found him and killed him. He never told a lie in his life, and when he died, he went to hell. Because in that situation, even though he'd made a vow, even though telling a lie is wrong, especially if you make a vow not to tell a lie, you should not break the vow, but the duty to protect that person was more important than the vow not to tell a lie. So it's a dharma sankat. There are two duties opposing each other. And you have to know what the right one is and what to do. So we have to understand. Krishna didn't want just to tell Arjuna, okay, do this, do that. But he wanted him to understand why. Otherwise, if Krishna just like in the beginning, Krishna started telling Arjuna about the jiva tattva, the nature of the living being. And then Krishna just told Arjuna, look, you're a kshatriya, you should fight, otherwise people will call you bad names. That didn't convince Arjuna. Arjuna really needed to be convinced if he was going to fight, because it was such a horrible thing for him to have to fight against his gurus, friends, brothers, means cousin brothers, even though they had not behaved like brothers at all, very, very badly. But he was so good-hearted, he wanted to forgive all of that. He didn't want to do that. And superiors, he didn't want to fight with them. But on the other hand, it was his duty to fight. That's kshatriya duty. Sometimes the father may have to fight against the son. It may happen. Brother to brother. It may happen. It's unlikely, but it can happen in kshatriya dharma, because kshatriya has his duty to protect the citizens. And if his own brother, he may end up on the other side. He has to fight. One has to try and kill the other. So if Krishna had not completely convinced Arjuna, then Arjuna said, okay, all right, you told me to do it, I'm doing it. And then it could be in the middle of the battle, 1 hour into the battle, or in the second day, or the third day, Arjuna suddenly thinks, wait a minute, what am I doing? And in the battle, you can't have doubts. And if for 1 second, you're talking about focus, right? When I came in here, Nanda Kumar, they say you're not focused. Sorry. So you were talking about the importance of focus in life and in Krishna consciousness. Now, in a battle, if you space out, you know that word, space out, that term? If you start thinking about what you're going to eat for breakfast tomorrow morning in the middle of the battle, or thinking about your darling sweetheart at home, then you're finished. You've got to be fully concentrated every moment. The battle starts at sunrise with the conches blowing and finishes at sunset. No floodlights. And you've got to be fully focused completely, because if you're not fully focused, you're dead. There are people trying to kill you, and they're expert, they're trained, they're practiced, and they want to kill you. You have to be fully focused and fully determined. The other party is fully focused and fully determined, and you're also fully trained and fully motivated. So both sides are like that. But if you lose your way, you start thinking, what am I doing here? Maybe I shouldn't be here. Then you're finished, right on the spot. You have to be fully into it, morning till night, every moment. No room for tea breaks, nothing. No such thing. And your friend, your brother, your loved one may be just killed right next to you, and you can't stop. You just have to go on fighting. Not easy. People like to see war movies. But being in a war, it's not easy. It's hell. War is hell. So Krishna wanted to fully convince him. And convince him in such a manner. We're not just talking about Srila Prabhupada says philosophical speculation. It's not just, well, Srila Prabhupada also spoke about armchair philosophy. You sit down and say, well, I think, and someone else says, sitting in another armchair says, I think. But this is literally a matter of life and death. And for Krishna, this is, it's perpetuating what he came for, as he describes in Bhagavad Gita, paritranaya sadhunam, vinashayata dushkritam, dharma sangsthapanartaya. He comes to uplift the sadhus, destroy the demons and re-establish dharma. So his uplifting the sadhus goes on even after he's left this world. It's going on right now in this talk through his Bhagavad Gita, and is establishing dharma. So what Krishna came to do, he's done in the world for so many years. He's been killing the demons. He's been uplifting the devotees. Listen, you can't do two things at once. Focus. Good word. But Krishna wants to that this should be perpetuated. Therefore, speaking Bhagavad Gita was for the sake of paritranaya sadhunam and for the sake of dharma sangsthapana. This was the most important thing Krishna had to do for the future. So he needed the proper person to hear, who was Arjuna, because bhakto sime sakha cheti rahasyam hiyatat uttamam. You're the proper person to understand this. So Krishna had a particular message he wanted to give to Arjuna. Arjuna could understand it because he's a devotee. We find again and again in Gita, Krishna saying, Mad bhakta etad vignaya, my devotee can properly understand this. Bhaktya mam abhijanati, I can be understood through bhakti. And even the Western scholars of Bhagavad Gita, they all admit, and they're not theistics themselves. When I say Western scholars, I mean academic scholars. They all say it's a theistic. It's theistic. It's meant for bhakti. But Srila Prabhupada wanted to establish this as a science, not just some not speculative philosophy, and not simply religious sentiment, but as a science, as a fact. This is controversial. In the present age, we're all trained in school to think that fact is something that we can ascertain through our senses and our intelligence. It is a fact that there are pieces of tissue paper on my left side. Not a very important fact, but that's something. We can all say, you can all see, even from the back. If you're not sure what it is, you can take my word for it. Okay. So it's something ascertained, it's non-controversial. We can all accept that. Easily ascertained fact. And science purports to establish facts about the world. Some things can be very easily seen and accepted. Actually, not that much in science, because once you start getting into it, then there are many things which it's not just by seeing, touching, tasting, smelling, or feeling, but you have to be trained to understand it. That's why if science was just a matter of show me and then I can believe it, then you wouldn't have to study science in school. It just, okay, see, okay, I saw. But we have to be trained to understand it. And it does become complex. And there are many things which go far beyond simply empiricism, simply what we can understand through our senses. In the Vedic language, there is pratyaksha praman, that which we can ascertain through our senses directly. And then there is anuman, which means that which we can accept to be true, even though we can't directly perceive it. Just like, for instance, if we hear sound, just like we heard a sound there, without the sound of the door closing, opening and closing. So without looking, we can understand the door has been opened, the door has been closed. The sound is just by the sound. We can, without looking, we can presume that there are no tigers just on the other side of the wall. We can presume that. It becomes more and more difficult in the age of technology where you can make all kinds of things which look real and sound real. But in science, yeah, then it becomes, as we go more and more into it, we find there are many things which do become speculations. For maybe the last, 30 years or so, there's been one massive speculation, or a whole set of speculations under the genre of string theory, which proposes to explain how relativity theory and quantum theory, according to the Copenhagen interpretation, can be brought together. And it proposes, in standard string theory, 11 dimensions. We have 4 dimensions, that we 3 spatial dimensions and the dimension of time. But they propose more dimensions to explain how relativity theory and quantum theory can be combined, because they both work in their own spheres, but they don't agree with each other. So what are those dimensions? Can you imagine what other dimensions are? Is it possible to imagine dimensions beyond? There's length, breadth, height, and time. And what is that? What other dimensions can you? Is it possible to imagine? Space means length, breadth, width, height. It's spatial. There is one actually, and that is that's accepted in the Vedic literature, and that's consciousness. But they want to explain that in material terms, because they're demons. They don't want to accept anything spiritual. Well, I looked into this, and I was trying to find out what do they mean by extra dimensions. And then the latest idea is that they're extremely small. But if they're extremely small, that means spatial. Right? So they're not extra dimensions. Anyway, we're getting into the realm of total speculation, because it's not demonstrable in any way. You can burn hydrogen in an atmosphere of oxygen and make dihydrogen oxide, water. Demonstrable. But string theory, you can't. Big Bang theory, it's not demonstrable. Biological evolution, not demonstrable. So we get into the range of speculation. But science means that which should be verifiable. So what is there verifiable in Bhagavad Gita? Why should we accept it as a science, when, after all, there can be multiple interpretations? Isn't it? In the very beginning of Krishna's instruction, he instructs about the nature of the Atma. But what is the intrinsic nature of the Atma? That in itself, there are two main schools who want to define the nature of the Atma. One says that there is only one Atma. Right? Everything's one. And another says that no, there is one supreme Atma and many others. Innumerable others. So how can it be called a science if there are different opinions? That's why we have to have Bhagavad Gita as it is. Because it's very clear from Bhagavad Gita, if we accept it as it is, Krishna says, Mamaivangsho jivaloke jiva-bhuta sanatanaha, that there are multiple jivas and they're all anshas, parts of Krishna, who is Paramatma. The term is there in Bhagavad Gita, Paramatma. If Atma was only one, then there would be no meaning of a term Paramatma. Apart from that, it doesn't make any sense. I am you, you are me. Someone comes and says, comes to you and say, I'm feeling very hungry, could you give me some food? Sure, come. So you call him, you sit down, put a big plate of food in front of you, eat it all and say, okay, you are me. I ate, so, but I'm still hungry. No, but you are me, so I'm happy. It makes no sense. But if we are to accept Bhagavad Gita as it is, then the science of the Supreme is understood. Now, immediate perception and anuman, which means speculation, guesswork, extrapolation from that which can be seen. But the Vedic system of understanding is, in English philosophy, that's called revelation, and that is rejected by a whole class of philosophers who are called materialists or the modern term is physicalists. They don't believe and they don't want to believe in any spiritual dimension, which in itself is foolishness. They claim that to believe in anything spiritual is foolish. But we claim to not believe in it is foolish, because if there is no such thing as a spiritual dimension, how could you have even imagined it? The fact that people have had spiritual experiences and continue to have over the centuries in itself suggests that there is such a thing. And there are many things can be said about this. I hope when I get to America, I'm planning to give my whole series of talks on atheism. But my big question, they say that there were, first of all, there was nothing and nothing exploded. Doesn't sound very scientific. As that, what's his name? There's one Rupert, I can't remember his name. But he said, in science they say, you give us one miracle and we'll explain everything else. That means the Big Bang. There's nothing and it explodes. So that's a miracle, right? Unexplained. It's not scientific. And then we'll explain everything else. So, okay, so there are a bunch of chemicals, blah, 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 and then they formed into, by chance, or amino acids, and then proteins, and then they became single-celled organisms. When I was at school, we were taught that the most simple cells are extremely simple, and very soon science will understand everything about them. Maybe 20 years later, I heard that actually now they say that they're extremely complex and we're a long way from understanding them. Now we've done more research. And then a few years after that, I thought probably when they were teaching that at school, they already knew that. But it takes time to change the textbooks and retrain the teachers. There's a lot of cheating in so-called science. So my question is, and they say it's all running on the will to survive, right? The struggle for survival. And sexual desire comes from desire to propagate the species. My question is, where does desire come from? Hydrogen doesn't have desire, nitrogen doesn't have desire, carbon doesn't have, boron doesn't have, and all. Even if you breathe in plenty of good pollution in the city, and it alters your chromosomes, but it's, where does desire come from? Chemicals don't have desire. Why should chemicals desire to propagate themselves? What's the answer? And then we have to have the science of Bhagavad Gita, in which Krishna explains. There is material energy and spiritual energy. Material energy, just like this body. You're now looking at me, right? You're looking at a dead body. Who likes to look at a dead body? Every body is dead. Even your nice young bodies. But it's the presence of the soul in the body which animates it. Once the soul leaves, chemicals. The chemicals have life due to the presence of the soul. And in any language of the world, when someone dies, they say, gone away. It's gone away. Chale gaya. Bengali, chale geche. Tamil, poita. Pulski? Poshun. Sounds like Bengali, Boshun. Gone away, every language. Who went away? What went away? It's your still your father is there. No, no, but he's gone away. Where has he gone? Who has gone? Intrinsically we know it. But due to atheism and foolishness and ignorance, we don't know. We don't accept. Therefore we should study Bhagavad Gita and accept it as it is. Scientific knowledge. To explain that which cannot be explained by telescopes, microscopes, and professors in universities. It's spiritual science. But we have to understand it from people who know. And it's a special kind of knowledge which you're not going to get simply from studying this world. It's given by God. We are to hear it, accept it, understand it. Actually, that's true in every subject, isn't it? How many times have I given this example? That when I first, in mathematics class, the teacher put calculus on the board. I didn't understand a thing. But I was confident that the teacher understood it, and he wasn't just making some squiggle on the board. There's something real there, and I can understand it, but I have to have it explained by the teacher. I can go on looking at the squiggle, but it needs to be explained. There's a squiggle with a number there, and a line here, and some X, Y, Z here, and something underneath. What do you do with it all? I don't know. But I'm confident that the teacher knows and the teacher can explain it to me. So he did. And to the others in the class also. So there has to be some initial faith. But it's not a blind faith. Some child may come and say, I can also make squiggles, but what the child does has no meaning. We have to learn from those who know. And there has to be some initial faith that there is something to be learned, something of value. And we're not going to learn spiritual knowledge by what is generally known as science, because what is generally known as science is based on the principle that we only accept that which we can understand by seeing, touching, smelling, tasting, feeling, and on the basis of that, making theories. But that means applying our own knowledge, our own intelligence, within a very limited sphere. So accepting spiritual knowledge means, first of all, to accept our extreme limitation. That there is spirit, there is God, and we need to learn. And there's a system to learn. And the system begins, amanitvam, adambhitvam. We have to give up the proud attitude of thinking I can understand everything by myself. Just like Arjuna, he started off very proud, superficially. In the beginning, Arjuna wanted to be the guru. He started instructing Krishna that this is not good to fight. And then Krishna smashed him. He called him a eunuch, which is for a Kshatriya, that's the worst insult, and especially for Arjuna, because he had already been 1 year cursed to live as a eunuch. So it's the most insulting thing. But Arjuna understood that Krishna is saying this to me. Arjuna had full faith that Krishna is my very best friend. And if he's saying this, I should take it seriously. So then Arjuna, after Krishna really smashed him, he blasted away Arjuna's pride. And then Arjuna submitted himself. Shashaste hung shadi mang tong prapanna. Now I'm willing to listen to what you hear. But Arjuna, he wasn't just yes, yes, yes. He didn't understand what Krishna was saying several times, and then he would ask questions to understand. Because it's not easy to understand, it takes a whole paradigm shift, because it's not only in this age that we're taught that we learn everything in terms of materialism. It's very intense in the present age. We're taught in the school what they call science, the scientific method. But it's been there since the beginning of the material world that we have this idea. That idea is there, that this world is here for us to enjoy. And religion is also something which God helps us to enjoy the world, either this life or the next life. So it takes a whole paradigm shift to understand it. As Srila Prabhupada has mercifully presented Bhagavad Gita as it is. Because if you take it that it's just something that Krishna said and it's just some philosophy and we can explain it in any way we like, then there's no meaning to it. Krishna had a specific motive in speaking to Arjuna. He wanted to get a particular result, but he wanted to do that on the basis of making Arjuna fully and completely understand who he, Arjuna, is and why he's in this situation, what he has to do in this situation. And that knowledge is applicable, that knowledge can be taken as a template for everyone in every situation. But if we take it as just something, well, we can interpret this word that way, this word, then it's not Bhagavad Gita as it is. Bhagavad Gita means what Krishna spoke. A specific message. But if we want to change the meaning, then it's a waste of time. Because we lose it. Alter the formula. We like to make chapatis. What's the formula? So much atta you have to put, and so much water. But if you think, well, atta costs money and water is free, pretty much, so why not put more water and less atta? Water it down. You won't get chapatis at all. You might get some kind of goo. Some sticky paste. But it won't be chapati. There's a formula for doing it. There's a way of doing it. There's a parampara for teaching it also. Even for teaching to make chapatis, you can learn it better from a real guru than from YouTube or from a recipe book. It's practical, it's a science. So if you try to change it, what Krishna wanted to say, what his intended message is, you're going to get the wrong thing. So it should be given as it is. And you should read it. Don't just keep it as it is. Krishna very kindly spoke Bhagavad Gita to help us all through our lives. So please, you all have Bhagavad Gita as it is at home. Don't just keep it as it is. It's not easy reading. Krishna never said, I'm going to give you something easy to understand. In fact, he said the opposite. Raja Vidya, Raja Guhyam is the most secret of all secrets. Karmano vyapi bodhavyam, bodhavyam cha vikarmana, akarmanascha bodhavyam, gahana karmano gati, Krishna says it's very difficult to understand what is karma, vikarma, akarma. Pandita hi mohitaha. Even great learned people can be confused about this. So it's not easy, but Srila Prabhupada, as an empowered representative of Krishna, has made it these very deep topics of the spiritual science. He's made it understandable even for people like all of us who have no training in this or background in it. Of course, we also need some help to understand it fully. And then we'll never understand it fully because it's so deep. But the basics are very easy to understand. There is Krishna, who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We are all His servants. We're meant to serve Him. By serving Him, that is our highest benefit. That's it in a nutshell. And then there are the basic topics in Bhagavad Gita. Ishvara, Jiva, Kala, Karma, Prakriti. These are the basic topics. They're all intertwined. And there's much discussion of the three modes of nature and their effect on the conditioned soul. Worship of demigods. So many topics are discussed in Bhagavad Gita. 11th chapter, we have the Vishvarupam, universal form. So many topics are discussed there. And then for further elucidation, we go on to Srimad Bhagavatam. Hare Krishna. Any question, comment? Yeah, give the mic there.
Hare Krishna. Please accept my humble obeisances. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, all glories to you. Maharaj, just does practicality kill your advancement in bhakti?
Does practicality kill your advancement in bhakti? I don't know what you're talking about. What do you mean?
Okay.
Practicality, I mean, it's a very broad term, isn't it? Bhakti is all theoretical. What are you talking about?
I'll try to explain in a scenario. We know for a fact, I mean, Srila Prabhupada has given us instructions, which we have, particular instructions which we have to stick by. One has to wake up early, attend Mangala Arati, do his 4 hours morning routine, and then continue with his household work, whether it's a job or a business. And simultaneously stick to the principles of Suchi and Muchi. Even if it means to sacrifice your social life or your entertainment. Well, at the same time, I've been told that one has to be practical, and even if you're not able to wake up for Mangala Arati at 4 o'clock, you can wake up at 7 o'clock, and that can be your Mangala Arati timing. So it's a little bit of a dilemma.
In the name of being practical, cutting corners.
Yeah.
Can it destroy your advancement in Krishna consciousness? It can do. If we take it that then we'll just take it easy. If we take it as an excuse to take it easy, practical considerations have to be there also. Srila Prabhupada mentioned once that we can't expect householders in general to follow us strictly as devotees living in the temple. So that's some practical consideration. They might not have the opportunity to make advancement in the same way, but at the same time, Krishna will be pleased whatever is done, whatever sincere efforts are made in His service. Rules and guidelines are given because they're helpful for our advancement, and as much as we can follow them, we should. Practicality can't destroy advancement in devotional service, but if in the name of practicality we make excuses to not endeavor to the best of our ability, then we're cheating ourselves. In fact, not being practical could destroy our advancement. If we try to follow to a level which is just not in our circumstances sustainable, then that will destroy our material and spiritual position. Yeah, there's another question there.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, I got a couple of questions. Can I ask all of them? First question is, desire, is it on the soul level? Like, why the material world is like this? I think the impure desire to purify...
Why is the material world like this? Because we wanted to forget Krishna.
Can you... I didn't hear... Can you repeat, Maharaj?
Because we wanted to forget Krishna. The eternal spirit soul, as part and parcel of Krishna, has the tendency of Krishna, of desire and wanting to enjoy. But the constitutional position of the spirit soul is to enjoy as a sub-enjoyer in the service of Krishna. But when we don't want to serve Krishna, we want to enjoy, then Krishna provides the material world to give us the opportunity to indulge in that illusion of enjoying separately from Krishna.
Can I ask next one? Dharma Sankat you have mentioned. I heard management is a necessary evil. So is it putting us into that Dharma Sankat?
Management is a necessary evil. Well, it's not necessarily evil. You heard management is necessary. Why is it a necessary evil? If things aren't managed, then you've got a big mess. Within management, there can be clashes, difference of opinion, and some pressure put on people which they don't like. That's there.
Mm. Hare Krishna Maharaj. You had given some... So growing up, I've always read Srila Prabhupada's Gita only. And whenever I've understood Gita, it always made sense just of how Prabhupada has explained it. I'm not able to think of any other way anyone can even interpret the Gita. But you had given an example of the Atma and how different people interpret the meaning of Atma as being one or different. Could you maybe give some examples of how some popular ways of how people misinterpret the Gita? What are the ways that they misquote the Gita? What is famous? Prabhupada addressed in some places, but if there's anything.
Oh, there are so many. Tilak in the 19th century, he interpreted as the main message is karma yoga, and then it became very popular. Do your duty, with the idea that just working in this world is your duty. And then of course he tagged that onto the idea of the Indian independence movement. Then there was, in the 20th century, there was Yogi Mahesh, something like that, who made Bhagavad Gita commentary only up to 6 chapters. He said, that's enough, that's the message of the Gita finished. Actually, the real message of the Gita begins at the 7th chapter. In one sense, you could say it's finished, in as much as Krishna introduces at the last verse of the 6th chapter the real message of the Gita. So there are some examples. Then we have Aurobindo, who says that just like there's biological evolution, so there should be spiritual evolution. So what Krishna said, we have to take that and develop it more. But Krishna says we just chanted that verse. Fourth chapter, text one. Protavanaham avyayam. It's what Krishna says. It's eternally true. That's science also, right? It's expected in that hydrogen and oxygen will always combine to make water in standard pressure. Of course, if it's under standard conditions, hydrogen will always combine with oxygen to make water. And under some conditions, you can make it H2O2 also. But normally, it's H2O. So that's science, and that's expected as long as the universe exists. So the same thing, what Krishna teaches, it's true for all time. So that's another idea that developing evolutionary spirituality. So there are so many funny ideas, but better you don't try to understand them.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Danutranam. Maharaj, as you were talking about dharma sankat, that one person gets in it, just a situation, I wanted your help in it. Maharaj, that
the whole life, everyone's life is one after another, dharma sankat, just like this. I have to chant my rounds, I have to do the worship, I have to follow so many things. I also have to do my material life, which is a clash with the whole thing. But I also have material duties to perform. So the whole life is like that.
Maharaj, there are times in our life where we get into certain associations or certain people who bring us closer to Krishna in certain time, place, circumstances.
Oh, well, try and make that all the time.
All the time. Yes, Maharaj. Sorry. But after a gradual period where people change, where certain time, place, circumstances changes, where first we were
time,
very...
Time, places and circumstances change, but Krishna doesn't change. And your relationship with Krishna doesn't change. So Bhagavad Gita teaches us to, while living in this world, to go beyond the conditions of this world, to see beyond the conditions of the world. I'm now in this condition, but it's only temporary, and my eternal relationship is with Krishna. Bhagavad Gita teaches us that.
But Maharaj, we require association of devotees.
Keep good association, essential.
So Maharaj, where we are taking association of certain devotees or people who are bringing us closer to Krishna, but due to time period or some other circumstances where we look forward for this association.
Therefore, Srila Prabhupada says, one should arrange one's life in such a way that one cannot but think of Krishna 24 hours a day. So we have to make decisions in our lives which will help us to remain in Krishna consciousness. That's the general guideline. If you insist that there must be circumstances in which I'm going to fall into Maya. It's not my fault I'm in Maya. It's just life's like that, that's all. But then you have to make an effort to organize your life in such a way that you will remember Krishna. And many devotees, they make decisions in their lives in which they may, for instance, forego a great material opportunity because they think that it's not going to be... There's so many examples. Maybe 20 years ago, some devotee told me he had an opportunity, he's a silversmith or something, he got some opportunity to get a job in South America somewhere, some island somewhere. And then don't go, there are no devotees there. What are you going to go? You're going to lose. You get more money, but you'll lose your Krishna consciousness. Another one told me, I'm going to Israel soon to work as a caretaker for old people. And I said, what are you going to do that for? Your husband's earning enough money to live and you're going to go there and serve meat to all these people and there's no association, you can't live like a devotee. here at least you can do your devotional life. So you have to make choice. In this case, I told them. But they were thinking of making choices which would have put them in bad association. So you have to make the proper choice.
Yes, Maharaj, it's just that once we are looking up to people who are good association for us so that we come to Krishna consciousness, but after a time we feel that that association brings more negative energy, because as more we associate with them, it feels now, previously it feels that we are coming closer to Krishna.
Feel. Krishna consciousness is a science also. So you have to see, if you're, by such association, if our Vasudeva Kata Ruchihi, our taste for hearing about Krishna is increasing, we have to be very careful also not to be misled by our own mind. It may be someone gave you good advice and later they don't follow it themselves. It may be. Then you have to disassociate yourself. It may be. I don't know the exact situation, so I can't say. Anything else? No, we'll finish. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Guru Maharaj, a couple more questions, I think.
Yeah, I've got time. Do I have time? No. I don't have time.
And your energy seems to be dipping, Maharaj.
Yeah, okay. So you're suggesting we stop here?
Okay, Hare Krishna Maharaj. We actually want four rapid-fire questions that you can answer in...
Four rapid-fire questions.
Yeah.
I don't believe in this. No, really, once I saw some BBC show in which it was a rapid-fire thing. It was supposed to be discussing about does God exist or not. Someone said, blah, 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 and someone else says, you have 20 seconds to speak. You don't discuss philosophy like that. That's nonsense. If there's something important to be discussed, you have to discuss it properly, take it seriously. It's not some TV show.
Okay. Yeah. What message would you have for the youth today?
Chant Hare Krishna.
How do the youth of today stop comparing themselves to others and focus on their spiritual journey?
What is that again?
How do we as youth stop comparing ourselves today?
Comparing yourselves to what? Yeah,
to others, and comparing our spiritual journey to others.
Read Bhagavad Gita as it is, understand your and others' existential position.
The biggest mistake young people make when starting their spiritual journey?
You're asking me what the biggest mistake is?
Yeah.
Why be negative? What's the best thing you can do?
The last one.
What's the best thing you can do? Look to the positive.
One book or resource you recommend for young people? Six.
One what? I'm sorry. Am I losing my hearing or what?
Sorry, I'm sorry.
No, it may be. I don't know.
One book or resource you recommend for young people seeking spiritual growth?
One book, many books, but Bhagavad Gita as it is. Really. All of Srila Prabhupada's books.
Thank you so
much. Bhagavad Gita, it's not easy. Actually, it's not easy, but it is understandable. It's not so difficult. But I often recommend this Science of Self-Realization as a good starter. Or if you look at that and think, that's too big, it's not that big, but you can read this, Perfect Questions, Perfect Answers. That's a very good introduction. Which books have you read? I hope it's not a rapid fire, you can say. Just one book. Oh, that's very good.
We're a part of a reading group,
Oh, I see. Okay. That was one of the first books Srila Prabhupada translated, and it had for mass distribution. It's really an advanced book. So, Hare Krishna, I should move on.